is your local station. Good evening and welcome to the Gnostic Waves, your fix of all things of a mystical, philosophical and psychological nature, with a meditation practice included at the end of the show. So glad you could join us this week. My name is Diana Razam, your host, and today I present to you a topic called The Seven Rounds and the Seven Races. So hopefully you can stay tuned for this program. Very interesting topic, if I say so myself. So we may as well just dive right into it. So if you're new to the show, before we start, there is a website. It's thegnosticwaves.com, so that's easy to remember. The hardest part is how to spell Gnostic, which is G-N-O-S-T-I-C, and then waves, W-A-V-E-S.com. So have a look at the website for past show recordings, and also it has a link to the Gnostic Society Australia Facebook page. And if you're on Facebook and care to leave a comment or a message for the show, then feel free to do so. And very soon we'll have an email address up and running for those who wish to email in. All right, so where to begin? So we have what's known as cosmogenesis, and I'm not sure if you would have heard this word, so I'll explain it. This is the word for the creation or the genesis of the cosmos or our universe. The big expansive universe that we live in. Now, it's interesting because we have, on one hand, the Christian or the traditional Christian view of creation being happening in 7 days in the book of Genesis. We also, on the other hand, have the more scientific theory explaining creation, which, you know, there's a few theories out there. The most common the known one is the Big Bang theory of creation, with the universe continually expanding. And, you know, it gets a lot more technical in, you know, the mathematics behind it. But tonight it was explaining more about the Gnostic theory, which is more in line with the theosophical teachings, which in turn have their origins in the Oriental traditions. But I'll explain that a bit later. So the other thing that I'd like to cover to a lesser extent is anthropogenesis. And this word means or deals with the creation or origin of man. And again, if we look at it from the scientific perspective, most common theory of the evolution or development of man is Darwin's theory of evolution, even though that theory in itself has holes or has gaps in the in the science. It's generally one that most people are familiar with, and definitely is taught in schools. So I remember learning that in biology must have been year 10 biology. But so all those theories aside, this story tonight starts, you could say, from Hindu cosmology. And it states that we have all emerged from the breath of Brahma, and that is the title for God or the Absolute, or if we're more familiar with the universe or oneness. So just anything that denotes that creative principle where we have all emerged from. And so it's said that the cosmic day of creation that we exist in lasts for 4,320,000,000 years. So a cosmic day runs for that time, and then there is a repose, and we go into a cosmic night, and that night lasts for the same amount of time. So given that this is the breath of Brahma, we are continually having cosmic days and cosmic nights. And this is consistent with what we know as the law of activity and repose. And this activity and repose we see in the patterns of creation and non-creation, you could say. But also we can understand this in our day-to-day life. Anything that we do, we will have activities of where we're doing, we're active, and then we're going to have periods of rest and repose. So this is something that we see in all walks of life. Now, so tonight we're talking about this unfoldment of creation, and it's very fascinating. We could even see it as an unraveling. And the author Dionne Fortune, in her, well, the book that I reference the most on this show, is called The Mystical Kabbalah. She calls this descent from spirit into matter a form of involution. So when we're coming, our energetic vibration is unfolding, or it's becoming denser and denser from the spiritual levels to the more material levels that we are living in and most commonly understand with the five senses. Now, from the point of view of the Tree of Life, or the Kabbalah, we see that our descent into creation, it starts from the top, from what's known as the absolute abstract space. Also, it's termed negative existence, and it's seen as darkness, but it's not darkness because it's like light before light emerges, which is beyond our concept. So to us, it's like a darkness. That's why it's so hard to explain what a God is, or the creative energy, the creative potential, because it's just beyond our understanding. And so we get lost in concepts, we get lost in beliefs, but the truth of the matter, it is what it is. So as an aside there, so we unfold from this negative existence, and then we unfold into what the Christian tradition know as the Holy Trinity. And then from that part, again, this part is hard for us to understand and to relate to. So normally we see the Holy Trinity as something that's exterior, external to ourselves. But when we start to study the Tree of Life and the Kabbalah, we learn that these are aspects of ourself, of our higher being. And so we can work with them, and we learn to connect with them, which is something really fantastic and revolutionary, you could say. So from this Holy Trinity, we unfold again into the realm of the spirit, then the realm of consciousness, followed by will, the mental world, the emotional world, the etheric world, and then in the physical world. So as you can see, the physical part, or the physical dimension, is one small aspect of the very big picture that we are in totality. And so a lot of this show in particular throughout the weeks is helping us learn how to reconnect with those missing parts, with those parts that are there but lie dormant, lie inactive. They somewhat atrophied because our consciousness is so completely absorbed in matter that we've lost that connection with those inner parts of our being. So I mention this, I mention the tree of life because it's a great way to understand the unfoldment of creation as we know in this physical world, but that there's also all these other dimensions that exist that we can know about. So before I go on, I wanted to take a music break just to allow us to reflect on that introduction. And I've chosen a piece. It's from the CD Baroque Duets by two amazing singers, Sarah McCliver and Sally Ann Russell. And this track is called Quando Corpus Moritu. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Anyways, back in a short while to continue on the topic of creation.
Thank you.
And we're back on the Gnostic Waves show. That was a beautiful track from the CD Baroque Duets, track 12, Quando Corpus Moritur. All right, so I'm talking on the topic of the seven rounds and seven races. And so before we go into what they actually are, just which is no easy feat, I want to start by iterating this is the explanation of how creation has unfolded from the start of the cosmic day, which in, for all intents purposes is the start of creation. So I wanted to talk a bit about theosophy, which is where these teachings, one of the avenues that these teachings have come from, apart from what the Master Samael has taught us, which is always good and helpful to know, to see and learn about the other traditions that talk about the same things. So I wanted to define theosophy for those who may not be aware. So the word itself, theos, means God, and sophia means wisdom. So it's all about understanding, you know, the mysticism, the spirituality. So very similar to the Gnostic schools and teachings. Now, the Theosophical Society began officially, was formally established in London in 1510, and its roots were based on a secret society in the 1400s. However, the American Theosophical Society officially began in 1875 by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, which you may have heard of before. And Blavatsky's most well-known teachings or book is called The Secret Doctrine. It's not her only one, but it's the most famous one. And it's said that the teachings she received from in regards to this book come from her translating a Tibetan manuscript, The Stanzas of Dzogchen. And Blavatsky also was quite an intuitive initiate, and she also was in contact with other beings, other higher masters. And so a lot of her teachings would have come from those sources as well. But the teachings that we present today are reflective of what the Master Samael, the founder of the modern Gnostic movement, has presented, and also his direct experiences of living in the times, before our race, current race now. And he was able to experience this due to his unusually high level of awakened consciousness. But anyways, that his history is something that actually was covered not so long ago, so you can download that recording if you want to know more about the Master Samael. Okay, so we have seven rounds and seven races, and we have descended essentially from what is spiritual, or from that negative existence, and descending into what is the material, which is where we are at this moment. And so the seven rounds are beginning with the mental plane. So we have unfolded in a mental type of existence, which is quite hard for us to understand because we're so material at this moment. But we understand that we have a mind, that we have a psychology. We probably have read or learned that our psychology, how we think, can attract the various circumstances in our life, and that's something that we definitely understand when we look at our egotistical nature and how our egos create certain dramas, tragedies, comedies to fulfill recurrences in our day-to-day life. So part of the awakening process is to actually awake up from the mechanicity of our normal way of being before we're aware of it. So this existing in the mental plane obviously is something more of the mental world. Now, after this unfoldment and a certain amount of time of living in the mental existence, there was the next round was the astral plane. And the astral world, again, we understand when we go to sleep at night, and we dream, our dreams, or the ones that we remember, are often a projection of our subconscious into the astral world. And also we can learn to travel consciously in the astral world if we have the ability, or we have the energy to devote to that practice, then we can do it. It's not something that's really quite out there. And there's, you know, also a lot of people that are very naturally able to travel in their dreams, called lucid dreaming. And, you know, that's fantastic. But there's also other people that can learn how to do this if we have the faith. And also there's two other things we need to overcome to do this. We need to overcome the fear, and we need to overcome the laziness. And these are two things that can block us in working to wake up in the astral world. Also really to block us from doing anything of the inner work, you could say, doing a meditation practice even. Anyway, that's another topic. So we have the astral plane of existence, and then after that unfolds, we have the etheric plane of existence. And then right now we are in the physical plane of existence. So we can all agree to that. We all exist in a three-dimensional plane at the moment. And so that's the fourth round. And then from here, we actually go back through the planes, go back up, or as Dion Fortune says, we start evoluting back into the spiritual nature. And so the next round we have is of the etheric plane again. And then after that is the astral plane, and then the mental plane. And then after that is the end of the cosmic day. As I mentioned, each cosmic day is a really, really long time from our perspective. It's like 4,320,000,000 years, roughly, and that's really more than any of us can be aware of in our current state of being. But the point here is that we have actually, our essence, our soul, has existed for a really long time and will continue to exist for a really long time. And that's pretty mind-blowing, which is you know, part of really accepting this truth, is that it goes beyond our concepts. It goes completely beyond our own identity, and it embraces something of creation and the universe that's just completely awesome. So as I mentioned, we're currently at the most densest, most material point of this cycle for this cosmic existence at this moment. And it's interesting because this explains why this idea of spirituality, of higher dimensions, of religions are something that people are very skeptical about. Like, we have people that are more open-minded or accept the beliefs that there is more to life than what is presented to us. There is more, there is life after death. You know, whatever way or form we believe that happens after we die, that it exists, that there's past lives, there's future lives, like reincarnation. And essentially, we have lost, or are losing, our intuition. We're losing what's known as the instinctive perception of cosmic truths. So what happens is materialism and sensations are winning at the moment. Our consciousness is becoming so stuck, so identified in matter, in fulfilling sensations, and that we don't see, we don't accept a life beyond this one. So this is a symptom, you could say, of the state of creation that we are in at the moment, into that physical material world. Even though we are in the physical, these other dimensions still exist concurrently. But you could say the unfoldment on a is that we have all physical world. So hopefully this is making sense. Now, moving on to what are the races. So we have the seven rounds, which denote the different dimensions, you could say. Now, the seven races are the unfoldment within each round. So in this current round, the physical plane, there are seven races. Now, these races, I'm just going to list them off. We probably may not have heard of them before, and that's quite okay. I won't go into them very deeply, at least not in this show. If there's something sparks interest to you, I definitely recommend finding your nearest Gnostic group and trying to get in on some classes, because it's definitely a place where you can learn about this in more depth than we can cover in any show. So the seven races. The first one's the polar race in the land of Thule or Asgard, and is the origin of the runic language. So the runes are something that I've mentioned before very briefly. It's one of the oldest symbols used for communicating and connecting with the esoteric reality. And Asgard, we've heard from the poetic Edda, and is used in Richard Wagner's Ring Cycle, and just a story of the different gods in that tradition. If we're interested in learning about that, then there's the recording tasting of the Heart of the Dragon, which is available on the website. Very interesting talk from Glenn Kaywood. So do have a listen if you're interested. So that's the first race. The second is the Hyperboreans. The third is the Lemurians. The fourth, the Atlanteans. The fifth is the Aryan race, which is where we are in this moment. The next race after this one is called the Karate race. And then the seventh doesn't have a name yet, so perhaps it's still being developed. It's too early to know what the name of that race will be. I mean, having said that, a lot of people probably wouldn't realise that the whole of the race that we are in now is the Aryan race. Interestingly enough, we could take a side note on the Aryan, because we most commonly may have heard that from the use of Adolf Hitler, who we know was trying to develop a superior Aryan race, and he mistakenly misinterpreted teachings, most likely from the Theosophical Society or school. And it's the Theosophists that we understand have labelled the race, the current race, as the Aryan race. And Hitler believed that the Germanic people were the superior Aryan race. And so there was his aim, you could say, of developing the Superman, or the real man, which in the Gnostic teachings we understand is the person who has reached the mastery, has reached that stage of the initiatic path where they've worked on themselves, worked on their egotistical nature, and worked to conserve their own creative energies, are then at that level of what's called a man or a superman. And so anyone that does what's known as the three factors is able to reach that status. But Hitler, due to various reasons, believed that it was only a certain group, the Germanic people, that were able to reach that status. And so he was, taking some esoteric truth, and there was a bit of distortion there with its consequences. And it's interesting because his philosophies were based on the Thule society. And as I mentioned, the Thule was the region of the polar race, so the first of the race. So it's based on philosophies and teachings that are pretty ancient. And where the runes came from, we know that his party used runes as well. So that's just a bit of information for those that are more familiar with the esoteric teachings of that time. So, yes, we are all Aryans, and I'll go into the unfoldment or the sub-race of the Aryans. But before I do that, I wanted to talk a bit about the Atlantean race, which we may have heard of. And this time has been spoken about by many people. So Plato spoke about the Atlantis Helena Blavatsky, and also Edgar Cayce. And I've been reading a book called Edgar Cayce's Atlantis, and it's quite interesting because it talks about Edgar Cayce, who, if you are unaware, was around last century. He was a psychic of some sorts. He had special abilities, probably had a awakened consciousness more than the most normal people would, and he was able to, under a state of hypnosis, he was able to do readings for people. And initially it started that he could determine how to heal people that were presented to him. So he was put under hypnosis, and that person could have been present in the room, but also he could do readings for people that were absent, so distant readings. If he knew their name and some other details about them, he could actually do a reading. And it was found that most of his readings were accurate. How he prescribed to diagnose and to cure these patients was largely accurate, it is said. And then he began to do readings for people beyond just for medical reasons, so past lives, lots of different readings to help people, essentially. And a lot of them involved talking about their past lives, and a lot of them involved talking about Atlantis, the time of Atlantis, and the past lives that people have had in that time. And the amazing thing about these teachings is that, or these readings, I could say, is that they were all recorded. They were all transcribed by his secretary, and they're all available for people if, you know, they wish to learn about them, which is quite interesting. So anyway, so in this book, he speaks a lot about Atlantis, and he tells a lot of people about their past lives in that time. And he says a lot of things, but a few of which he says is that this society was quite highly technologically advanced, and so it had things that we don't have at this moment. So people could travel across to different places, you know, on Earth, but also intergalactic travel was quite common, and just their ways of generating and using power from the sun. They had special crystals to harness the energy, that the natural energy that existed from the sun and other sources. They they're just more, they had technology that we've lost, and there's reasons that we've lost that. And they suffered periods of destruction. So from Edgar Cayce's readings, there were three distinct periods of destruction, with the final cataclysm culminating with the flood that we know of in the Christian tradition as the floods and Noah's Ark, which is where the remaining people survived these floods. So that was the final destruction of Atlantis. And, you know, a lot of Atlantis, or all of it, is inaccessible because of this reason. So for a lot of people, there's not really that hard facts quite yet to validate Atlantis. But I'm not an archaeologist, so, perhaps there are things that have been documented, but it's been such a long time since that time, and so, you know, it's hard to use the technologies we have to support these theories. But anyways, so it was said that these destruction and this loss of technology was due to the fact that there was a very strong black or negative presence or schools of people that abused this power, that abused the technology for purposes that weren't good, weren't for the common good, and were quite evil. So as a consequence, the that empire, you could say, went through a series of destructions and fell. And as a consequence, we've lost access to this type of technology. But in a book written by T. Lobsang Rampa, who, you know, is another very interesting initiate who wrote books as well, and he, in one of his books called Cave of the Ancients, they actually are taken, or he is taken by a group of lamas to somewhere to be able to access some of the technology from that time that has been stored in that cave. And from memory, it's things like machines that could help, you know, you connect with your past lives, or you know, to read auras, or just all this technology that would just be amazing in this day and age is essentially locked away until we are ready to actually receive that technology. So it's interesting when we have that skepticism of these things that exist. It's, yeah, it's not that these things don't exist. It's just that we as a society are not yet ready to receive and to use that technology because it's so powerful. And then if we misuse it, then we all suffer the consequences. So that is this, like, a very quick summary of the Atlantean race. Now, earlier or before that, we have the times of Lemuria, which Edgar Cayce doesn't really talk about in his readings, as I understand. But what's interesting is that he talks about things that happen in Atlantis that sound like they have happened in Lemuria based on what the Master Samael has talked about. And so the Lemurian times we can understand as the times of paradise. So in the Christian tradition, where we have the Garden of Eden, where everything was peaceful, the concept of yours and mine didn't exist, and that people lived really long lives. It was a mainly an etheric existence, and towards the end of Lemurian times, it became more material, and the Lemurians, so yes, they had long lives, they were quite large in stature, and they also started off as androgynous, and then towards the end there was the splitting of the sexes. And we probably go into this more in another show, the times of Lemuria, because there were some significant events. So what we understand as the fall from Eden is something that in the Gnostic teachings there is a very different explanation of what that fall denotes. And so hopefully in a future show we can do that in a very simplistic type of way. And from that point, then the ego developed. And so that's why it's really interesting to know the start of the ego, that start of the me, myself and I, where we are. It's in contrast to the thing that yours and mine didn't exist. And then we started to develop things that are mine. And now we are so contained and self-reliant and self-sufficient that we've lost that connection to other people, and therefore a lot of that paradisical state has been lost, lamentably. So that was the Lemurian times. And so, yeah, as I was saying, Edgar Cayce talks about times that could be in Lemuria. As is mentioned in this book, there is crossover between those times. So who knows? Anyways, the people delved in those times, delved in things of genetic modification, we're told, and the result of that genetic modification is a karma that we're paying now. So really the moral of the story here is, it's better not to mess with our genetic structure, but it seems like we haven't actually learnt that lesson yet from these past times, which is unfortunate. Okay, so very quickly, there's seven sub-races within the Aryan race. So it's not, as I said before, it's not just the Germanic. It's everyone that exists in these times is part of the Aryan race. So we have the Tibetan tradition, we have the Indochina, we have the Egyptian, Babylonian, Chaldean, we have the Greco-Roman, we have the Teutonic or Anglo-Saxon sub-race, we have Hispanic America, and then we have North America. And so it's said that the last of the sub-races is like a mixture of all races, and we see that now. We see that, and due to travel, the ease of travel, people of different races are in different places. So that is something that is the sign of the end of this race, essentially. And so all these races have ended, and this one will too. So it's said that the golden age is here. That it started probably 2012, but unfortunately, this we are currently still in the Iron Age, and the golden race will begin with the next race, which I mentioned is called the Karate race. And from the Karate race, we then start the ascent to go back into spirit again. So we've reached, as I said, we've reached the maximum material level, and now we're going from the next race to start to become more etheric, and then move into the astral, the mental planes, and then back to be absorbed into the absolute abstract space. So unfortunately, our society at the moment hasn't quite reached its goal of reaching the golden age. There was great potential, but unfortunately we appear to have failed. It's quite easy to see. We look on the news and we see things that don't really support the idea that we've reached a golden age. There's definitely more sympathy or more interest in New Age type of concepts, ideas, but really that true connection to our spiritual self is hard to find. It's hard to find true connection, true belief, true understanding of those principles of the esoteric nature. But anyways, that's okay. It's not all lost. We continue to work on ourselves to develop our connection, and then that truth naturally comes back to us. Okay, so I'm going to play another track from the Baroque Duets. This is track one, Stabat Mater Dolorosa, and then we'll be back for the meditation part of the program. Getting ourselves ready for that practice. Making sure we're in a comfortable position. That there's minimal distraction. We're able to go within for the next 10 minutes. And unplug, so to speak, from what we know as life, normal life. From our day at work. What we're going to eat for dinner, what we're going to eat for for dinner tomorrow. All of that is not so important for this practice. So working with the breath, allowing the breath to flow through us, rejuvenating the cells, rejuvenating our emotions, and clearing the mind. Taking some deep breaths. And allowing the prana that's in the breath to do its work within us. So prana, you could say, is that life force, that energetic principle that exists in everything, and that through our conscious awareness we can extract from anything. But today we're working to extract it from the air, the oxygen that we're breathing in. Allowing this very simple but profound activity of breathing to sustain us. To be appreciative that we have air to breathe, that we have a physical body that's able to assimilate the breath. We take breathing for granted because we don't need to be conscious of it for it to occur. So hopefully we're feeling a bit more relaxed, a bit more alert. And I want to do some reflections because we've covered a lot in this particular talk tonight. A lot of things that we may not have experienced ourselves. Creation has existed for a very long time. That creation will continue to exist for a very long time. And that we, our essence, the fraction of our soul, has also existed for a very long time. When we start to lose the identification, the attachment to our current existence, we then become more open, more receptive to experiencing our consciousness in existences before this one. As a starting point, I would like to reflect on the person we are today is the result of our actions from yesterday. So anything that has happened to us, positively or negatively, is a result of cause and effect. And then everything that we've done today is like a blank check for what we will receive, go through tomorrow. So the culmination of the events and actions, the conscious actions of our life to date, has a big role in the effect or the life that we live now. The events of our current life are affected by the events of the past, our past lives. So there's a teaching that says that we are always repeating the same events in the various different lives, in the various different personalities. No matter what the time, the country, the era, the culture, we tend to repeat the same things. Trying to use this practice to expand our awareness even if it's just the concept that we have existed before to help us have that direct experience, that direct knowledge that may help us in this life. At the very least, it can help us to understand any difficult situations we may be going through, shed some light why this may be happening in this life. Okay, so that's just a very short practice. Just to get a taste, to get an understanding of the bigger picture that we exist in, that we are a part of, but we are mainly asleep to. Okay, well, that is all the time we have for this week's show. Thank you for joining in, and we look forward to your company next Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. I hope you have a good week until then. Take care, and we'll catch you next Tuesday. Good evening.